Sign up to get an email every time a blog is published. Kelly says, Jen's story empowers us all to rise above our circumstances. Jen is an inspiration to all who have the privilege of being touched by her life. Her writing style is open, honest, and engaging. Her story is powerful, not because it's heart-wrenching, which it is, but because she chooses every day to live a life that shows she is not a victim of her circumstances. Jen's strength as a woman empowers us all to overcome the circumstances of our own lives. If you've checked all the boxes in life and yet you still wake up wondering, is this all there is? Or you find yourself feeling overwhelmed and stressed or triggered by past events, the blog will help you get through those negative emotions and lean into joy. Corrine says, when I signed up with Jen, I had no idea it was possible to be joyful. I couldn't see the joy in my life, even though I knew it was there. Jen helped me not only identify the joy, but see how much I had to be grateful for. Each day starts differently because of Jen and her coaching. I highly recommend her if you are ready to turn the switch from negative to positive. It's 100% free to subscribe to the blog. Go to the link and connect with Jen and choose joy.
Got it. Hello and welcome to At a Crossroads with a Naked Podcaster. We are live and I'm so excited today. I have Becca Powers on. Becca, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am awesome. I am super awesome.
Welcome to At a Crossroads
with a Naked Podcaster. Something is playing.
We are live and I'm so excited today. I have Becca Powers on. Becca, how are you?
This I'm is good. Awesome. How are you?
I am awesome.
It's like double playing. Wait, hang on. This is nuts. We are live. However,
how are you? I am awesome.
I have no idea what's
double playing.
It is. It's like triple playing. Okay. I figured that out. Holy cow. That was crazy. Can I just mute it? No, I'm just going to leave it. Okay. Yay. That's done. Sort of. Welcome, Becca. How are you?
I'm good. That was fun.
I mean, you know what? I'm doing two things that I haven't done previously because I wanted to try them with you. And there you go. So let's jump in to your website. BeccaPowers.com. So that's pretty easy. And everything is in the show notes, by the way. All the links are in the show notes. Jump in and tell me about BeccaPowers.com and what it is and who you are and what you love.
I can't wait to talk about it. So BeccaPowers.com for me is a way that I get to show up and empower women, especially women that are still in the workforce, is kind of like my soft spot. I am definitely, I've got 20 years corporate under my belt. I've had several entrepreneur efforts on the side. I'm a mom of four of a blended family. So I am doing multiple things. I always say like my plate is extremely full. And I have learned over time how to manage that a little better because I went through severe burnout, right? I went on all cylinders to the point that I got sick. So, you know, when I built BeccaPowers.com and when I was like, I'm going to write a book, I want to coach, I want to speak, I want to start having a message. It was really to empower the, you know, working woman to be able to have it all, both personally and professionally. Cause I feel like I'm going to say it again, like there's a sacrifice effort that goes in. It's like, I might be able to thrive personally, but then I can't thrive professionally. Or if I thrive professionally, then I can't thrive personally. And so really what I wanted to create and share was that you can have it all without sacrificing it all. And so that's what the website's about.
And isn't it interesting that we don't know, we get so stuck in that hamster wheel. I think all of us. I mean, it's so common that you wake up and you're like, I checked all the boxes. I did all the things. I love my kids. I love my family. I love my house. You may even love your job. Like each aspect of it is good. Then why are you waking up so miserable and unhappy and feeling unfulfilled? And
yes, Jen, that's exactly right. Like that's where I found myself and I call it my bathroom floor moment, but that's, you know, that's where I ended up when I had everything going on all cylinders at the same time. I had, like you said, the family, my personal life, my job. I love my career, right? And everything was on full blast. And I didn't know how to prioritize myself in that formula. And I ended up like on the bathroom floor crying in desperation that there had to be another way.
And there is, and there, yes. I mean, both of us talk about that. Tell me about the book, and you also do a lot of podcast appearances. So I just want to shout out that on the website under podcasts, you all your appearances are there. And it's super easy to contact you if people want to hire you for speaking. So let's talk about the speaking. Let's talk about the book.
Yeah, let's go into it all. So, you know, following the website, you just mentioned the podcast, which we can circle back to. The speaking is something I'm really passionate about. So what I find has gravitated to me, like, you know, we start putting our message out in the world and you kind of see where it lands, is I've ended up doing a lot of speaking for corporations within their women's group and talking about women's worth at work. I do speaking engagements at, you know, conferences and things like that too, but I just found it really interesting that my sweet spot has kind of ended up being within women's groups within corporate America, which is where I've spent so much of my career.
I love that. And that's where us mamas are really suffering. You know, I have to say, I was a stay-at-home mom for a decade, about like 12 years. And then I went corporate for about 11 years. And then I became an entrepreneur for the last five. So I've done all three of those. And regardless of where women are at, even though you focus on that corporate mama, there are pros and cons to every one of them. And every one of them, you're working your butt off. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because the other thing you mentioned is, let's talk about the book. Well, that's exactly right. Like, Harness Your Inner CEO is really designed off that point of like, everybody's life is uniquely different, but it's our job to be the CEO of our life. Like, you're the CEO of Jen Enterprises. I'm the CEO of Becca's Enterprises. Maybe that means I'm a stay-at-home mom. Maybe it means that I'm, you know, a corporate, you know, girl, or maybe it means that I'm an entrepreneur. In my case, I have a little bit of all three going on, and that's what works for me. And that's what I really got passionate about, is like, as I mentioned that I had my bathroom floor moment where like everything kind of fell apart. Well, then I had to put myself back together. Right. And there's a lot of division that goes on in just society. And then even talking to friends or mentors and stuff like that, or like, maybe you should just be an entrepreneur, or maybe you should just follow your corporate dream, or maybe you should spend more time at home. And, you know, this thought that I had to divide myself drove me insane and actually felt more paralyzing than anything else. And so I got into a place where I call it the power of and inside the book, but I was like, what if I can be all of these things? Like, what if I gave myself permission to be a freaking badass mom and, to pursue my corporate career and also have a side business, you know, because I have passions and other things that aren't fulfilled within either one of those profiles. You know, what if I gave myself permission to have it all? And it was kind of from that space, Jen, that I was like, wow, all of a sudden that internal struggle kind of started melting away. And space started opening up. It was the most radical thing, because all I wanted was time and space. And it kind of started with giving myself permission that I am multifaceted. I like to do multiple things. And I think once I accepted that that's my nature and that's who I am, I was like, I was able to quote unquote harness my inner CEO and be like, this is how I show up in the world. And then I got really passionate about showing other women, like, it doesn't matter. You have your own unique story. Like, Jen, you have yours. Like, you know, like, once you come to terms with this is who you are and you start showing up more authentically as yourself, life starts unfolding for you in really magical ways.
I agree. Let's go back in time. Let's just jump back and start sharing your story, because you've alluded to the bathroom floor. So we want to know the story that happened leading up to that and that.
Yeah. I mean, and they all are connected, as in most cases. So Let's go back in time to Becca was 5 years old. So I was a very intuitive little girl, and most of us are intuitive, right? But as a little girl, I was very insightful. I followed my intuition on things, and I would talk like that to my mom. And like, I'm 4 and 5. And she's like, who are you, child? Like, I'm like, mommy, I think this is this, and, or I feel this. And I was very much in tune with myself. And my mom kind of got scared by that. Mm-hmm. And she in essence rejected me for that and was like, there's something wrong with you. People don't normally talk like that. So I had no concept of what should or shouldn't be said at 4 or 5 years old. And here's my mom saying, people don't say, oh, I'm following, I'm following my feelings at 5 years old. Like, so it kind of freaked her out. And because it freaked out my mom, it freaked me out. And I started thinking something was wrong with myself. And it made me like start to dim my light and start to present myself in ways that were more palatable to other people, but that really weren't an authentic expression of myself. And so I spent a lot of my personal life trying to find validation and achievement, to be honest, Jen. Like, I was a competitive soccer player. I've been in sales my entire life. I've got multiple president's clubs. I mean, I can have like awards and accolades out the door, but it never satisfied that spot in me, right? That I needed to have approved by my mom.
Don't you think that this is like, as a parent now, this is one of the things that I think is a huge struggle. It's a huge struggle for me is when your kids are like not socially correct, or like they'll walk up and they'll be like, I really like your necklace. It's very pretty in the line, right? They just say what they see and what they're thinking and feeling, right? But they'll also go up and say, you know, like, why is your front tooth black? Which is like not, and it's so hard to direct them to be socially appropriate and not squash them or have it kind of crush their self-esteem and self-image. That's a really, really, with my own kids, that is so hard to navigate. You want them to be that free, intuitive person, and yet also understand that it can, like, it's a power of great and a power that can hurt people. Your mom didn't handle it well, like at all. She didn't allow you that ability at all. But man, even when you are aware of it, that is a hard thing to navigate as a mom.
Yeah, so hard to navigate. I think all 4 of my kids would probably say I didn't get it right at some point. So.
Oh, I'm sure. I don't even want that laundry list. But, you had this experience that really crushed your little soul, which makes me
want to
scoop up this little girl and love on you. At the same time, that's so hard to navigate. And it's so hard to find that balance in a good
thing. And it was, and I want to share just like a little bit more of how, because it often comes back up like as lessons or a repeated pattern, right? And you talk about generational stuff, like we've talked about that a little bit before. And how it re-showed up for me is like my career was always one place within my life where it was safe. It was safe to be me. I was expressive. I was always rewarded. I didn't have anyone, like, I'm in sales. People want performance, right? So I never had anyone asking me to tone it down, right? Like, they're like, turn it up. Let's go. Like, you make money when you're turned up. Let's go. And so here I am. I'm a regional sales manager with an organization, and I was relatively new, and I had a completely different leadership style. I came from high tech and I was going into healthcare staffing. And my director at the time, after about 4 months of being on staff, he called me in and asked me to tone it down by 50%. He said I was being too much. And so that hit that childhood wound, like, again, back in time, little Becca from 5 years old, resurfaced. And instead of being the strong, confident woman that I am, like, if I was in my power in that moment in time, I would have told him, I don't know how to do that. And like, that request is ridiculous. However, it triggered my childhood wound. And so instead of saying that I don't even know how to accomplish it and ask like that, I said, I'll do whatever I can to match that. And it was a soul crushing experience for me. And I was in my mid 30s when that happened.
Well, yeah, you know how every once in a while you say something where you're like, yes, I need to walk away right now. I'm on, like, you know, you say the right thing at the right time. And I had someone that I had dated long-term say, you're just too strong of a personality to have a successful relationship. And I looked at him, I said, it's not that I'm too strong. It's that I've chosen weak men. But how many times in your life do you actually say the right thing at the right time? And you know, because like usually you have to take it in. It's shocking. It hurts your feelings. You have to not get defensive, think it through, come up with your response and state that response confidently without being confrontational in a second and a half.
Yeah.
It's super difficult.
Super difficult. And that was a fantastic like mic drop moment, by the way. Let me just,
yeah, there's only been a couple, but I like to shout that whenever I can.
Yeah, like I have one.
But most of them are like yours.
Yes. And they're, I got stuck.
Even
hurtful. And I'm someone who, again, has worked on myself. In my career, especially, that was my safe spot where I felt esteemed and confident. And it still shocks me that I got knocked off my horse so hard. Like, it was a shocking experience, to your point, right?
Well, yeah, but it's like we talked about before. I mean, you can have all these boxes you've checked and you really love your life. And yet, why do you wake up feeling like, is this what it's supposed to be like? Is this all there is? What happened to who I used to be? You had a trigger from a childhood, which are those 2x4s that slap you when they're least expected, because it's not something that you consciously think about.
Exactly.
And wow. How hard. So you said you would try to meet him.
And you were, yeah, I said, I will try to meet that request. And I can tell it was said from a good place. I think that my leadership style was different than the leaders that had been there for a long time. And I might've been ruffling some feathers and stuff like that. So I don't think that there was any intention for it to harm me. It just did. It was one of those things that just, like you said, the 2x4 came over, hit me over the head. So I spent a long time, meaning like 2.5 years in this space of trying to meet expectations that I was never, ever going to meet. Cause how can you ever be 50% of yourself? And so the more time that I spent in that space, the more disconnected from my authentic self I became. And the more disconnected from myself I became, the more disconnected I became from my kids, from my husband, from the things that were important to me, because I started spinning, you know. And then we had like that little side note about calendars, but from a calendar perspective, my life looked on point, right? I worked out at 6 a.m., I went to work, I worked my full day, I had the school plays, I had dinner scheduled, I had, you know, yoga on Saturdays. I mean, from a calendar, it looked like I had my life together, but underneath that calendar, it was falling apart.
I want to dive a little deeper into this, because I don't think this is something that many people realize until later on. So I want to really highlight this part of your struggle. Is that when you could only show up 50% at work, that's how you started showing up everywhere else? Because you'd think you just put it in its little folder, right? Everything's categorized. But women don't generally, and this is not a gender thing. Yes, men too. And I'm very logical and visual. I'm not feeling and super warm and fuzzy and intuitive naturally. But I don't want to put us in a box, but women more so. If you shut yourself off from one thing, you shut yourself off from everything.
Yes, that's how it worked for me. Mm-hmm.
How did that look in your family?
It was really rough, because I inadvertently gave the reins to my husband of 4 kids in middle school. You know, like, he wasn't prepared for that. I was mom, and here now I'm trying to put extra time in at work. And I can't say that I did a great job either. It probably was like the worst of my career years as far as like what the output I gave. But from an effort standpoint, I was there, like I left the house at 7:30 every morning and I stayed at the office till 6 o'clock every night, which meant I didn't get home till 7. So from the family's perspective, I was gone 12 hours a day. Right. And so now my kids, like I was previously in the tech industry where I worked from home, I had a lot of schedule flexibility. And now I'm in this new thing. I'm trying to prove myself. I'm gone 12 hours a day. This whole cycle lasted 3 years, but my husband was the one that started, you know, cooking dinner. And like, I really gave him the role of mom and dad, and without even like realizing that I did that. And it was devastational to our family.
Who recognized it? And what was that conversation like?
I believe the bathroom floor was a pivotal point.
Okay.
But we can talk about that.
The bathroom floor. I mean, we can always go a little bit back. Like a lot of things had to happen. So you have two kids and they're the same ages. I want to point that out. It's on your website.
Yes.
You had 5 and 7 when you got together. And you were already blending a family. So let's just a reminder here that being married's hard.
Very.
Having kids is harder. Like I think being married is like cakewalk compared to adding a child or two in there. And then when you're divorcing, you're blending families, let's take everything hard about all those things and amp it up, which is why the divorce rate is so much higher with subsequent relationships, especially involving children. It is really
hard. So hard. And it was emotionally tolling on all of us. And that's kind of, you know, I joke around about the bathroom floor, which we'll talk about, but it was just increasingly getting there because, you know, my husband's a firefighter. He's a lot more structured and I would say more militarian in the way that he raises children. I was raised by my parents were hippies, like legit hippies. They were full-time musicians when I was born. So I have a much more like love and unity and compassion way of raising the kids. And together it gives them a lot of structure and a lot of understanding. But when either one of us gets out of balance, it's either too loose or too strict. And so for my kids, their stress levels went up, and I didn't notice it for a long time because I was disconnected, but I would say near the, my last 8 months with the company and probably 4 or 5 months prior to the bathroom floor moment, I started really recognizing like my husband withdrawing from me. We were fighting more. I noticed that my kids' grades were starting to slip, you know, maybe from A's and B's to B's and C's, and just like what's going on? And then, internally, I felt so frustrated because I thought I was doing my best to provide for the family, right? Everything. And that's why I talk about sacrifice so much is because, you know, as moms, coaches, leaders, any role that's kind of in that servant leadership thing, it can be really easy to slip into a sacrifice mode versus serve. And so I thought everything I was doing was for my family, right? When essence, I was hurting them more than anything else.
I love this conversation because, again, I'm going to make a stereotypical, this is, I think, happens much more frequently with men who are working so hard to a fall, right? That need to provide, that proving yourself. And I love that you're a woman who was like, nope, that was me. And you're the one that's warm, fuzzy, compassionate, peace, love, and all of that stuff. So that, like, you must have been so confused. It must have been so confusing to you and hard.
So confusing. It was so unclear because of that confusion. I was like, I don't understand. Like, I just didn't understand
right. What
was happening.
So interesting. So things are slipping. And then let's dive in. I can't wait to hear about this bathroom floor.
So, it was the pivotal changing moment of my life. That's why I talk about it so much, but I had just one of those days that we were just talking about at work, like very draining, very long. I was gone for 12 hours, but I particularly had a bad day at work, and I came home and we're going through the motions, doing dinner. And I realized like that day I was aggravated. I like that awareness came that I was disconnected. Like my kids were talking to me and I had like 1,000 thoughts. I'm sure listeners can relate to this too, but like, you know, people are talking to you and you got 1,000 thoughts going through your head. But I was like, I don't want to be this person. Like it hit my heart. Like, this is not the mom that I want to show up as, you know, this is not the wife I want to show up as. And I just had that during dinner that night, I had this, like, everything was in slow motion and I had clarity that like things were just so messed up. And so like, once we got the kids to bed and I went to the bathroom, it's like 9, 10 o'clock at night. I'm washing my face and doing all the things to get ready for bed. I broke down and I hit the bathroom floor, you know, and I remember hitting my knees in desperation and calling out to, you know, God, universe, like, I am out of answers. I am out of effort. I am tired. I'm broken. I don't know how to fix this. Like, I literally didn't have any energy left to put forward to the next day. And I was just begging and praying for a different way to be shown to me. And that is when I say, like, my instant miracle came through. And that's the book, that's why the book was written, because I had an instant memory of an old leader I had at Dell. When I resigned to Dell to go to this company, I had to resign to my VP of sales. And one of the things that he said to me when I resigned, I was like nervous that I was going to be marked not rehireable and all of that, but I had the opposite reaction. I was following one of my internal like mission mantras as a leader. And I was telling him about that. And that's why I was leaving. And he said to me, he's like, I'm so proud of you, Becca, you're the CEO of your own life. And he really saw me standing in my power and standing in that. And I remember when he said that back to me, I felt so validated. And it felt like one of those moments in time where, like, I still remember that day. I remember where I was, what the air felt like. It just like resonated over me, but I had forgotten about it, right? Those 3 years had gone by, like that clear moment in time it was just a moment in the past, but here I am on the bathroom floor and it comes straight back to my forefront. And I'm like, I'm the CEO of my own life. And I was able to catch a breath and I was like, well, if I'm the CEO of my own life, then I can stand up from the bathroom floor.
It's so normal that at our weakest moments is when we're like, God, where are you? And he taps us on the shoulder and goes like, I've always been right here.
Yes. Like, hello.
Ways, and I need to find a different way. And he's like, yeah, you were given that. There's this joke about this pastor in a flood and he's saving people and he's prays to God, you know, send a boat, and a boat would show up and he'd save people and then he'd pray and eventually he drowned and he gets to heaven and he's like, why didn't you listen to me? And God's like, I sent 3 boats. Like, and I know I totally botched that joke, but the message is the same. Like, God's there shouting sometimes. It's not even like the small whispers or the gentleness of the Holy Spirit. Like, sometimes it's like the foghorn, you know, and that person that had been in your life that had already given you the answer, that was inspired to give you that answer. And then just the reminder that it's right there.
Yeah, it was right there. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. At what point did you have your first big conversation with your husband about needing to shift?
Pretty much immediately. Like, I remember going to bed that night and just being like, I don't know how things are going to be different, but things are going to change. And, you know, we had a lot of repair work to do. But like, as in most couples, like when the love is there and situations kind of get off track, you know, it's like one of those things. He looked at me and was like, I love you and we'll get through this, you know, but I think he could tell the shift in me so I could feel the shift in him back. Like he had me, like, we got this, you know,
which is awesome, because when things are hard, that's the hardest conversation. Like, that's been the hardest conversation for me to have, is that, wow, we're way off track and this isn't where I want to be. And the instantly deciding that you're, there's no way forward, but forward together, you know?
Yes.
And that's going to be really hard.
Yeah. And the unpacking of it was not easy.
Right.
We have also four kids that went through that experience with us too. And so there was lots of reconciling and lots of feelings that need to be shared, and everyone needed a space to be heard.
Right.
So, you know,
it's never fun to hear what a crappy mom you're being.
I was going to say the amount of mom guilt that I had for a little while. Was
If your own guilt isn't enough, let's add fuel to that fire, right?
Yeah, like, some mom guilt. It's okay.
My daughter once, she's like, yeah, I remember one time you spanked me. And I've spanked very rarely. So I was like, really, what do you remember about that situation? She's like, we went to church, we came home, I had a white dress on, I wanted to drink grape juice, and you said, change out of your white dress before you drink grape juice. Because if you get it on it, like, it's done, I can't get it out. She's like, I didn't, I spilled it down the front of my dress. And she said, you were really mad, and you spanked me, and you were upset. And I looked at her, and I'm like, so how do you feel about that now? And she's like, I can't believe you didn't pummel me. Like now that you have an adult recollection of what that really means, like, mm-hmm. I was outright defiant in the moments, though, in the moments of being parenting, your kids don't have any retrospection of why you're doing what you're doing, and that maybe it makes sense and what it means to provide and they also don't understand that you're creating your story at the same time you're helping them to create their own. And you can be quite at odds with that. So I'm sure there was a lot of reconciling.
Yeah, there was.
What stands out in that with your kids that they really needed or were upset about, or like any part of that from your kids that the kids that they really needed?
Well, the answer, I'm going to start with what they needed and then like end with what they needed secondly. So in that moment, what they needed was me to be present, right? They felt emotionally neglected. I was there, but I wasn't there. And it was some of their more vulnerable school years, right? Where they just needed to talk about their school day, or, I mean, like, it wasn't anything earth shattering, but they needed me there every day. And that leads to like part two of the answer that I wanted to give, like what got them through it and back on track was me being there. Right. I mean, we did go to therapy and we did do things, but I was engaged. I sat through everything. I listened, I was present. And so they finally got the gift of my presence, and it was a game changer for them.
The gift of your presence and then trusting that you won't lose it too, I imagine.
Yes. Yes. That's a very good point.
What happened in the months? Because you said there were 8 months from when you had the realization, you were still working at the same place, basically. So the situation hadn't changed. Your mindset had changed, but nothing had really changed. So let's bridge that gap in your work life and the book. I mean, then you don't have time out. I mean, so let's write a book.
Yeah. Like, let's just throw that in there. But a lot of things kind of happened. So about 5 minutes leading 5 months leading up to the bathroom floor moment, I started to have drop-ins of awareness that things were wrong. I just didn't know what to do with that and how to change. So I actually got more stressed because now I have awareness, but I didn't know what to do. And that was probably, I would say, the most stressful 5 months of my life, because without tools, right, I'm just sitting in awareness and feeling stuck, which was horrible. Then I had my bathroom floor moment. And from that point, I stayed at that company for 3 months. And what I really want to say to anybody who might also be going through a similar experience, you know, your situation may look different, but just similar in the sense that you've stuck and you have awareness, is that concentrated, consistent effort in the direction that you want to go, it was the way for me. So like, for an example, at work, I had mentioned earlier in our conversation that I had a high need for like approval, validation, being highly involved in things. I stopped being so involved in things. I stopped saying yes and started saying no. And that was a really hard for me, because so much of what I felt my worth was tied to all this outside approval and accolades and things. So once I started saying like, no, I can't take on that extra team member or that extra meeting or this extra project, you know, I had to deal with like an instant level of rejection, like, you know, that shock. And that was really hard for my system to take initially. I was like, whoa, I can't believe I'm doing this. Right. And, you know, a couple times I wanted to be like, I'm just kidding, because things got really awkward at work really, really fast. And then, once I started saying no a couple times, then I stopped getting asked to participate in things. So, work started looking more distant, and, I was being excluded on things much more, but by choice. Right. So, I say that because what happened for me was eventually that all that started to feel really good, right? Because now I'm standing up for myself, and my self-worth was, instead of taking hits, was getting, you know, getting fueled. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel good. No, I'm protecting the time with my family because that's important to me. You know, I'm leaving at 5 and getting home at 6, and it's just an hour, but it's a big, important hour, you know. And it was just little things like that that ended up being really big things. And then once my confidence kind of increased from having that repeated pattern, a new job popped in my life just like that. And
weird how that,
not just like that, like that's like God's work, right? Like, right. I put in the work, and there's the offer, there's the opportunity. And so yeah.
How did you get through? So if you feel like your self-worth comes from the accolades, and you're saying, no, I understand that like your self-esteem is being hit, like you're questioning everything probably. Cause
sure.
How did you, was there a turning point, or was it just time and that consistent effort? Cause that's compound interest working for you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Those small daily actions that add up over time. Was it just that compound interest effect over time, or was there something bigger or a combination? Because you can't go from getting most of your self-worth from one place and then not having it and just being like, I'll just get my self-worth from a different place. You know, like,
right.
How did you make that shift? That's tough.
It really stemmed from that moment when I said, like, I got my instant miracle. Like when I realized that I was the CEO of my own life, I felt my personal power increase. I realized in hindsight, I didn't realize in that moment,
right,
that it was in that moment though, that my self-worth started being coming from the inside rather than on the outside. And I did look through the lens of all my interactions as I'm the CEO of my own life. Does this serve me, or is this sabotaging me? Is right. This serving, or is this sabotaging me? And it took, like you said, that compound interest of constantly looking at decisions, because I was questioning everything. I had to just get in this like repeated pattern. Is this serving me? Is this serving me? Is this serving me? Or is this hurting me? And
100%, that's pretty important. We have to make so many decisions. I mean, I remember when the kids were little, you know, people are like, you have to learn to say no. I'm like, you have to learn to say yes also.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like a one-way thing. Like you're doing too many PTA activities or whatever. It's if it were only that simple. And saying yes and saying no is sometimes within ourselves. Like I'm not a PTA mom. My husband jokes about it because we have this 8-year age difference at the end. And when she went to kindergarten, he's like, these are all your PTA moms in their 20s. And I was like, probably not. You have to, though, know like who you are, what's your zone of genius, what are your strengths, saying yes and saying no, you know.
Absolutely. And that's a really good point, because I did say, I was using the example of saying no, but it was also being able to know what is my zone of genius and what am I saying yes to. Like I was a regional sales manager at the time. And as I'm getting interviewed for job opportunities, I'm looking to go into, not a demotion really, but I'm just using that analogy. I'm going into as an independent contributor at a sales executive level, where I'm a salesperson now selling to executives rather than being one myself. And so, but that was what I was saying yes to. I was like, this is feeling really good. This is what I want to be saying yes to, and more meetings and more responsibility at work is what I want to be saying no to. So yeah. I think that's a really important distinction that you're talking about, is being able to know what you want to say yes to and what you should be saying no to.
This opportunity came up for this new job. How different was it? It's always interesting to me. Like, would it have been on your radar at all had you not hit the bathroom floor?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Okay. So that's a cool thing to know.
Yes. Yeah. So, I've been in the tech industry, the high tech industry. I worked for Cisco, Dell, Rubberbed, like a lot of big logos in the tech world. So I saw myself going back to tech. Yes. But I had been a sales manager at my highest point. I was a sales director managing a $400 million business with 110 people. So like, did I see myself going back down to a salesperson? Never, really. That was long ago in my career. But when this job presented itself, they're like, oh, well, this is outside sales. I was familiar with what the role was, but I'd be selling to director level and above. So I would have enterprise accounts selling, complicated solutions, so to speak, at an executive level. I'm like, I love problem solving. I love, strategizing. I've got the executive experience. I know how to talk the talk. I know what they're looking for. I'm like, actually, this feels like a really good fit. But it was that shift in perspective of just being open to what was coming in. And I was like, this actually feels really good. Add on to that I've actually made the most money I have in my career, and I'm the happiest I've ever been.
So. Holy cow. For a demotion. But isn't that, I don't know if it was technically being demoted. I know it was a job you had done previously, even if it was a lateral move. I mean, sometimes it is just the fit of the job or going mm-hmm. back. So having that offer and saying yes to that was you gave your notice, huge changing point. How much did it change we know it changed your income, but how much did it change your relationship with the kids and how it was set up and your personal stress level?
I mean, it changed everything and really was the foundation of the book, because it's probably took me about 2 years to go through my entire transformation. Like, I took the new job, one job led to another job. And like, once I was back in industry, my connection started coming out. And then once I was in my zone of genius, so I was easily achieving and closing really big deals and things like that. So like, my energy was high, right? I was happy. And so now that energy is trickling into my home life. And my husband and I are back to like dating and going out, to see friends and the things that we love to do. My kids and I, like, I am giving them individual one-on-one time. I am doing family time. There's all sorts of times happening. I'm in a job that is no longer in the office. I'm working from home and I'm on the road a little bit. I love to travel. So for me, like, I was gone from home a night or two, but what I gained was being home 5 days, right? Yeah. And so that shifted the dynamic of the house tremendously and just increased the joy everywhere.
You had to recognize it though and have that bathroom moment. So then launch into, I love this because now we're coming full circle and we can wrap up with the book and with, so tell people about that. I want to know about how you decided to write it and then you did write it and how much that's kind of shifted things, because now you have this whole website and everything. So let's bring it full circle.
So once I got into this new space, right? And I talk about this, one of the three themes of the book is personal power, which we've talked a lot about. We've kind of hit the prosperity, which was the end result, but the middle one is what I call passion. And once I was able to get my personal power in check, passion came back out. And I think so many of us already know the things that we love to do. I'm a writer. I've been writing I have journals stacked to the back. So if I look back to my childhood, I've been writing since I could write. And so that I finally gave myself permission to write. Prior to writing to the book, I was writing short stories. I was writing poems. I just got back into like a writing space. I have started recalling what I did to heal myself and kind of building framework so that maybe as a coach, I could share it with other people. But I say passion because once I was able to start doing some of that stuff, and then here's the service thing, right? Like once I started understanding that what I went through could help someone else transform, and then I started working with clients and I saw their transformation, I'm like, oh my God, like, yes, there's really something to this. So sitting down to with an editor to really put these steps in a way that provides a step-by-step transformation was really the foundation of the book.
Yeah, it's great. Well, I interview almost exclusively entrepreneurs, and that was not, I didn't look for that. It wasn't my goal. It was kind of, I think you, perceptions, projection, right? I put out what I was and I got back, or however that works. But I realized within a few months that every entrepreneur births their business from their struggle, and that their goal is to make it faster, easier, and more supported for the people that they can help.
Yes.
They tracked their journey. They got the training and they figured out what worked and how it worked. And then their whole goal was so that people did not have to be as hard for other people. So that's exactly what you described, right? Like, oh my gosh, I can help other people in the same situation. So what can people expect? They can buy the book. Does that kind of give them your story and the framework if they want to DIY it? And then they
Yes, exactly. It gives them both. It's the how I feel the framework work, how I just shared it. Like it starts with part one is bringing them into their personal power, two, reconnecting them with their passion, whatever that is for them. And I have some ways that people can explore what passion means to them. And then I feel like the prosperity is a result of standing in your personal power and doing things that you're passionate about. You typically tend to attract opportunities and more prosperity. So the framework is done like that. It is written in a way that they can do it themselves. Right now, because it's end of the year, I don't have the coaching up on the website, but obviously if you're listening and you're on BeccaPowers.com, coaching is part of something I do. I'll be opening up a couple spots here soon. So you can subscribe, you can get a free chapter, subscribe on there. If you want to take a peek at the book, you'll get on my mailing list. But I'll also be doing group coaching for Harness Your Inner CEO in probably late Q1, early Q2.
All right. Oh my gosh, Becca, thank you so much for sharing your story. I loved chatting and learning.
I know, it was awesome.
It was awesome. Thank you so much.